Okay, thank you. First, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to give this talk. I'll start with some general introduction and motivation for this work. So over the last 20 years, we learned a lot of things about high-density gravity. And to some extent, this started from an observation that the AGS group is the same thing as a conformal group in one dimension less, which eventually led to the AGS CFT correspondence. And from there, we got holography more general and more generally general holographic tools. And we came to believe that AGS CFT actually even defines what is quantum gravity by just working on the CFT side. And at the same time, we also learned also a lot about Schwarzschild black holes and also how to the general fluid gravity correspondence. So it has been great 20 years. But of course, before that, for let's say the previous 100 years, the emphasis was not on AGS, but it was more on gravity with asymptotically flat asymptotics. This is the harm of quantum field theory, where we have asymmetric in and out states. And then if we start thinking about quantizing gravity, we can start first thinking about quantum field theory on curved backgrounds. And this was first done in this context. And then from here, we get the semi-classical gravity, Hawking radiation, and black hole thermodynamics. So all of this was developed in this context. And more recently, we learned a lot of things, interesting things about the asymptotic symmetry group, the BMS group, and its role in setting up some sort of holography. And also because this is such a kind of an old topic, in a sense it's 100 years of Einstein gravity, we have a lot of nice techniques, kind of solution generating techniques for obtaining solutions. And also this is the harm of kind of perturbative string theory, the only context where we really understand kind of the UV of quantum gravity. So if one looks at this and contrast them, then there are clearly a lot of things, so there are some things in common. There are also a lot of things which are different between the two. So over here, we don't really have yet holographic tools, or this is still in its infancy. While we understand perturbative string theory, we don't understand really non-perturbative techniques. While here we understand kind of black, to some extent, black holes using AGS-CFT, over here, kind of the underlying thermodynamics behind Schwarzschild black holes and the underlying dynamics is really obscure and we don't really understand it. And similarly, over here, some of the elements we have here are missing. We don't have similarly powerful solution generating techniques. There is no infinite dimensional BMS group, or at least is not believed to be one. It's really no analog of S matrix. So one may wonder, is this really, I mean, there are real similarities and differences. So what this work is about is try to build a bridge between the two that's going to connect the two sides. And building such a bridge, one might hope to learn both from here to over there and vice versa, kind of transport knowledge and techniques from one side to the next. So that's what the AGS rich flat correspondence is. It's a bridge between AGS gravity and vacuum Einstein gravity. And you will see there, to some extent, it's a little bit a strange way to connect them, but from as I will try to convince you, it's also a canonical way to connect them and to transfer knowledge from one to the next. So this work is based on something that should appear very soon, maybe a week or two, we've done with Marco Caldarelli, and our earlier work was done with Marco, John Camps, and Blaise Gutero. Oops. So what I will do today is I will first start, so the emphasis of this talk will be mostly on holography, but of course, as I said, the main tool is building this map from one to the other. So the actual map may, and I believe will have more general applications than just on holography. But the emphasis here would be holography. So I will start with a review of holography, just putting back the basics. Sometimes, in a sense, we go too much into details and we forget the basics. And we will start with, let's say, the best cases we understand, the AGS holography. Then I will discuss a little bit. Then I will discuss non-conformal brain holography, and because this is really relevant when I will go to discuss holography for AGS rich flat correspondence. And then from here, I'm going to end up kind of contrasting the situation in this case as well. We understand how to set up holography to the case of asymptotically flat gravity, where the situation is the opposite. And this will give us an introduction to the AGS Ricci flat correspondence. So I will start by reviewing the stuff we did a few years ago. And then I will discuss the new stuff, where we generalize this to almost the more general case. And then I will conclude. So any questions on the general introduction? OK, so let's start with the basics. So first of all, any gravitational theory is expected to be holographic. This is just based on black holes and the entropy of black holes. That doesn't depend on asymptotics at all. So any theory should have a description in terms of non-gravitational theory in one dimension less. Nevertheless, the current formulation of holographic dualities depend very sensitively on the detailed structure of asymptotics. And the case we understand the best is the case of AGS asymptotics. So this first argument suggests there should be a way to reformulate holography in a way which does not refer to asymptotics. But the actual work over the last 20 years suggests the opposite. It says this is very specific to the asymptotics. So I will try to reconcile these two different points of view. So let's now review how AGS holography works. So first of all, the best case is where we really understand holography is where we get them from string theory via some decoupling limit, because that implies the existence of a holographic dual. And the prototype example is the near horizon limit of D3 branch, which give rise to AGS 5 process 5. Now, so in this case, the dual theory is a CFT, and all CFTs have a universal sector. Namely, this is described by describing the correlators of the energy momentum tensor. So all CFTs have an energy momentum tensor. One can just consider the sector, or we're just looking at correlation functions of the energy momentum tensor itself. So that system closes on itself. And then this universal sector is described in AGS CFT by AGS gravity. So if we ask the question, what is AGS gravity? AGS gravity is the dual of the universal sector of CFTs. So how do we actually do computations? So first of all, specific solutions of that theory just tells you about states of that CFT. So the simplest solution, which is the AGS solution, just represents the vacuum of the CFT. So the space-time has a conformal boundary at r equals 0. And then the way we understand holography currently is that now we need to impose boundary conditions there. So in the case of AGS, the right problem is to fix a conformal class. So you fix a metric up to a conformal transformation. And now giving this data, then we look at the corresponding bulk metric always has the asymptotic form I give over here. And then engaged gravity duality, the various terms in this asymptotic expansion have a well-defined meaning. So the G naught represents the source, which couples to the dual energy momentum tensor. And then So this guy over here, so these terms are not so relevant. They're locally related to G naught, but this part, this guy here, is gives the expectation value of the energy momentum tensor. Now, suppose we want to compute correlation functions. So what we do is we start with, we take G naught to be eta aj plus a small deformation. So if we just be eta aj, again, this is just representing the state. And then we compute exact bulk solutions perturbatively in the solution, and we select the solutions using regularity in the interior. So again, regularity in the interior tells us that this coefficient GD again. So just by asymptotics leave this undetermined, but now have exact solution. This is going to tell us what is this. It's going to relate these two pieces of data. So then the regularity in the interior says that this is going to be of the form I indicate over here. We have linear terms, quadratic terms, and so on. And each of these pieces have a very well-defined meaning in holography. So this piece here is just a two-point function of the energy momentum tensor. This piece there is a three-point function, and so on. So let's look at the simplest possible example, which is just a two-point function around ADS. Then in that case, the equation is solvable and is given in terms of a Bessel function. And then using regularity, you select the Bessel K function. So now once you have this, again, you expand this asymptotically. And then you pick the GD coefficient, which is this one. You put it here. That's precisely the correct energy momentum tensor for a CFT. Okay. So remember that the solutions with the Bessel, the Bessels are going to come back again. So that's how ADS holography works. So all other cases are just generalizations of that. So any questions before I move on? Okay, so now let's move now to discuss non-conformal brains. Okay, non-conformal brains are obtained similarly. You have a similar decoupling limit. You can start from the other D brains and take a similar type of decoupling limit as in the case of D3 brain. And then you obtain similar dualities. Now, for this brain, the geometry is not ADS cross a sphere, but it's conformal to ADS cross a sphere. And if you reduce over that sphere, then one obtains an asymptotically parallel geometry with a running dilaton. Now, precisely because the asymptotics are unconventional, it took a long time for precise version of holography to be worked out. It took 10 years between these two initial papers to the point where precise dictionary was established. And the reason was that the unconventional asymptotics. So now let me briefly review how that.
Yes.
So P is related to which brain is you're considering. So if P equals 0 would be D0, P equals 1 would be D1, and so on. So P equals 3 would be the standard ADS 5 crosses 5 in D3 brains. Okay, so let's review how this is done. So first of all, it took such a long time precisely because, again, it was different asymptotics. But now let's start from the beginning. So I said in this slide that the geometry is conformal. Oops. The geometry is conformal to ADS cross a sphere. So this means you can reduce over a sphere to get an effective theory in lower dimensions, the same way we do in ADS 5 cross a 5, where we reduce over the S5 to get a theory in 5 dimensions. And in that case, in this case, the lower dimensional theory in all cases takes the form I give over here. So this is the analog of ADS gravity for non-conformal brains. And in this case, the universal sector of the theory is not just the energy momentum tensor, but it's the energy momentum tensor and another operator. And that's the operator which is coupled to a dual coupling. So in all of these cases, the theory is Young-Mills coupled to scalars and fermions, but in all cases there is a single dimensional coupling constant, namely the Young-Mills coupling.
So it's conformal in some frame, yes.
Sorry, here I'm starting to get confused because you were saying holography, the holographic principle should be able to tie gravity in the dimensions to one lower dimension.
Yes.
But you're bringing string theory. You're talking of brains. Why? This is like extra baggage.
Yeah, absolutely. So here, at the end of the day, one should be able to reformulate all of this without necessarily using string theory. But here, my starting point is the cases where I know there is a holographic dictionary which can be quantitatively understood because I get it from string theory. And so then I will start from that and then start generalizing. And then eventually forget where I came from. Okay, so the main difference between the D3 brain and the non-conformal brains is that the non-conformal brains contain a dimensionful coupling constant, which is never zero. So you need another field to take into account the fact that you have a dimensionful coupling constant. So this is this field phi. So in this case, the universal sector, which is again the correlators of the energy momentum tensor and the operator which is dual to the phi, and essentially this is the action of the theory, is described by this action. So this is the minimum. The minimal setup is to start from this action. So the analog of Einstein gravity in this case is Einstein gravity coupled to a scalar field with this type of coupling. So now if you want to understand holography, you need to understand the analog of the Feffman-Graham theorem for this theory, which is the reason it took 10 years for this kind of work to appear. Because we didn't work for 10 years. Yes.
So, do I understand this correctly? You're saying that in any dimension other than phi, your duality is not to Einstein gravity, but Einstein plus a scalar.
So I'm saying the ones we understand qualitatively and quantitatively, that's the case. Okay, so now we need an analog of Feffman-Graham theorem, which is a much more difficult exercise. Because, of course, the field equations here are more complicated. But OK, we managed to do this in 2008. And then the surprising fact was one that that settled, you know, after, you know, 50 pages of actual paper. One finds that the Feffman-Graham expansion, the analog of the Feffman-Graham expansion is almost identical to that in NDS. The main difference is that there are some unusual powers that are appearing. So in ADS, this power here would be D, the space-time dimension. Here you have the sigma, which is a fractional power. It's different depending on which case you are considering. You see sigma is this values here, this fractional numbers. Okay. But OK, modulo this, you can then carry out holographic normalization, find the counter terms and so on. And again, one finds a formula which is almost identical to the one we had for ADS gravity. And then one can also work out linear fluctuations around the brains, and then find the corresponding two-point functions. And this is the formula one gets for the linear fluctuation. So you can see this is, again, almost identical to the formula we had earlier. The difference is that earlier we had D, and here we had sigma, this fractional power. OK, and then one can wonder why are they so close.
But what is H0
is the source you put for the perturbative source you put for the energy momentum tensor. So the
on the brain.
Yes. So here, so G naught, which is the source of the boundary theory, I take to be the flat metric plus H naught. And then you solve the equations, and then you pose regularity in the interior. And this gives this formula here. So relates the sublinear coefficient with the linear coefficient with that form. And then from here, you can extract two-point functions, and they have all the expected behavior and so on. But one can wonder why this complicated analysis gave a result which looks so similar to ADS. And the answer is in the next slide. So the starting point for the action, so here the analysis started from here. So this same action can be obtained in the following way. So we can start from ADS to sigma plus 1 gravity. And then we compactify on a torus. And then so when you compactify on a torus, we're going to keep the metric in a scalar field. And then when you do that reduction, one finds a formula which is identical to the one we had earlier here. Except that, of course, here we started from ADS gravity in the higher dimension. So a priori, this sigma is an integer, where down here is meant to be a fractional number. But nevertheless, as long as these coefficients do not, let's say, go through zeros or infinities, then one expects a smooth dependence of the solution space on this parameter, so you can change that parameter. So that's something that we call generalized dimensional reduction. So you do a generalized standard dimensional reduction, and then the dimension of the compactification manifold becomes a parameter in lower dimensions, and then you continue that parameter to other values. So now this process here is actually a consistent reduction, which means that all solutions of the reduced theory originate from solutions of ADS gravity. So this means we can, with no loss of generality, we can start from solutions here and then reduce them down there to obtain the solutions of the raw dimension of gravity. So the structure of the solutions really originates from ADS gravity. So all results which are needed for establishing a holographic dictionary for the lower dimension theory are inherited from the corresponding ADS results via the generalized dimensional reduction, meaning we can get automatically the asymptotic solutions, the counter terms, and normalize one-point functions in the presence of sources, and so on. So the fact that the results were so similar just comes from this fact, that is because they're inherited from ADS. Yes?
So the high-dimensional ADS with sigma?
Yes.
That you start with an integer value in the beginning. Does that ADS have any physical implication?
So you can think of it that if you look at it from the perspective of the dual theory, so the dual theory, which is some, you know, Young-Mills theory coupled to scalar, if you go that strong coupling, has a fixed point in fractional dimensions. And this map controls not just the UV of the theory, also controls part of the IR of the theory. So this also links black hole solutions and the nearby hydrodynamic regime, and explains the form of the conserved charges, thermodynamics, and values of transport coefficients. For example, for the non-conformal brains, it was known since the 90s that the equation of state is given in this form. Of course, it was not given in this form because people were just inserting here the values of sigma. But now once you see it in this form, it kind of cries out for explanation. It looks like the conformal equation of state in two sigma dimensions. So this explains this equation of state. Also explains why the eta over s for the non-conformal brains is also given by 1 over 4 pi. Again, it's inherited from the same result in ADS. It also explains the form of the, you know, zeta over eta and so on. So this really controls many of the properties. So in this specific case, we're able to understand the physics of the non-conformal brains by linking them to the physics of ADS via this generalized dimensional reduction that involve a usual dimensional reduction followed by analytic continuation in the parameters. Okay, so now let's summarize and contrast this with the case of asymptotically flat case, which is the topic of this talk. So in these two cases, while we really understand how holography works, there were two main properties. First of all, the fields that parameterize boundary conditions in infinity, they act as quantum field theory sources. And secondly, the gravitational on-shell action is the generating functional of quantum field theory correlator. So that's the way we understand holography. So for this to work, this requires that the fields that parameterize the boundary conditions must be unconstrained because they're sources for operators. You cannot functionally differentiate constrained sources. And secondly, the infinities in the on-shell action should be local in these fields because this theory is meant to be dual to a local quantum field theory. So this holds non-trivially for the two cases I review. But now if you try to see whether this holds for asymptotically flat gravity, it actually fails. Both of these conditions fail. So the actual, if you look at the asymptotic expansion, the different coefficients are now related by differential equations, so they are now local to each other. And so the infinities are non-local, and the fields that parameterize the boundary conditions are not unconstrained.
So, sorry, can you repeat that? I'm not getting either of those points, how they are not satisfying the asymptotic flat case.
Well, of course, I haven't explained it to you. So, what we did in 2001 was look at an analog of Pfeffer-McGraham expansion for asymptotically flat gravity.
Where? What type of boundary are you
imagining? In special boundary I zero.
At I naught.
Okay. I naught, yes. And then what you find is you can set up the problem in a similar way. First of all, the linear coefficient, which we expect to be unconstrained, is actually constrained to be locally de Sitter. And secondly, the splitting coefficients are now related to the previous ones by differential equations.
But that may be an artifact of you trying to do something that I know. You could have done it perhaps at I plus, and everything could have been local and everything you want. So in which case it would guide a different holographic representation. But
there may be different
flat base,
for I naught, yeah. So for
there's a lot of assumptions
built
in that thing.
Well, it could be that there is different. Actually, recently with the BMS group, different. One can see that different ideas are arising of how holography is going to work. But also, as you will see later on here, you will see how I relax these conditions in a different way. But definitely, if you do it, if you want to set the dictionary and I not, it certainly doesn't work the way it works for ABS. So at least for I not, the straightforward extension of this methodology doesn't work. And through the years, the different people try to set up a dictionary in different ways. And all these different approaches, there's always some non-locality that's coming in. Okay, so if we want to answer that question, so we started saying holography says it should be a dual, but the dual cannot be the way we really understand it for the case of ADS. So we have to do something else. Okay, so that leads me to ADS Ricci flat correspondence, which is going to now give me a link between ADS and asymptotically flat spacetimes. And hopefully we'll learn something from that map, which is going to teach us how to go forward. So again, the main of the topic today is the bridge between ADS gravity and vacuum Einstein gravity. I'm going to have some comments on holography, but this is not something we have done. So far we're building the bridge. Okay, so how does it work? So I already reviewed this earlier. So we said if we start with ADS gravity, and then we reduce on a torus, and we keep a metric and a scalar, we get an action which is of that form with some coefficients alpha and beta. So this is the same. This is exactly the same formula as the ones I had earlier. So now let me start from vacuum Einstein gravity in different dimensions. So here we started from D plus one and we reduced down to P plus two. So now we start from different type of dimensions, N plus P plus three. And then we reduce over an N plus one sphere. So we're doing a reduction of that form. So it turns out this reduction here is also consistent reduction. So all solutions of that theory originate from solutions of that one. Well, now it's exactly the same form of the action, but now the coefficients alpha and beta are given over here. So the coefficient on this side, the coefficient beta was related to the curvature of ADS, cosmological constant. Or here, the coefficient beta is related to the curvature of the sphere. And now if you look at these formulas, then you can see there is a simple map. So if you take D to minus N, you map solutions of this theory to solutions of that theory. So this D or N, and they're analytically as parameters of the equations of motion of that theory. So they're not, you should not think of them as dimensions anymore. And then what you do is you meant to try to continue from the one to the other, and this gives you a link between this theory and that one. So let me make this a little bit more explicit. So here it is. Now suppose we start from ADS and we want to arrive at the Ricci flat. This works also the other way around. So any solution of ADS T plus 1 gravity, which is of this form, so here we have a metric, a scalar field, and we compactify on a torus, so this solves these equations. Now from here, we extract this metric and the scalar field. So this is going to depend in general in the dimension D you started from. Then you substitute D equals to minus N, so you get different now functions G and phi. You plug them in here, and this is now automatically is automatically Ricci flat. So this solves this equation. And you can do it the other way around. You can start from here and reverse the steps to go over there. Okay, so this map requires that we know the solution for any D or N. So we need one parameter family of solutions. And this maps families of solutions of ADS to family of solutions Ricci flat. And this analytic continuation happens at the lower dimension theory. So in this, from that perspective, again, D and N are parameters in this theory. It should not be thought as dimensions. And extensions to other compactifications, cosmological constants, and so on are possible. And some of this have been worked out in these papers. And as I will argue in this talk, this resulting Ricci flat solutions have an underlying holographic structure, which is inherited from that of the asymptotically ADS solutions. Okay, so next I'm going to discuss some simple cases just to start to get a feeling of what this map does. But any question before I move to it? Yes.
Yeah, sorry. So this will entail if I need to know all solutions for any given D.
So yes.
Even solutions that would have been unphysical.
So towards the end of the talk, I'm going to try to relax that condition, and we have progress. But at this point of the talk, this requires knowing solutions for any D and for any N.
But even solutions that I could have been unphysical. Because as you go from D to minus N, so something that would have decay as 1 over R to some power, now it's
going
to be
blown. Yeah, so the question becomes, when you map the solutions, does it map nice solutions to problematic solutions? Is the map useful? Because it could, you know, map some nice solutions to something which we regard as unphysical, as you say. And as you will see, at least from the examples, this doesn't happen. It maps interesting solutions to interesting solutions. Okay. So the simplest example is to just put ADS on a torus and relate that to Minkowski. So if you do that, then you find, so you put, you have your ADS, you compactify some of the boundary directions. You follow the map, so here it is in terms of the metric. So these are compactified. And then what happens when you follow the map is you replace this with a sphere, but now the radial coordinate of ADS combines with that sphere to give back flat space in polar coordinates. So now the boundary of the space-time here is mapped to the location in the middle of the space with p-brain boundary conditions around it. Okay, so that's how it acts on this case. So Minkowski with p-brain boundary conditions is mapped to ADS compactified on a torus. So this is, in a sense, the first kind of take on the dictionary. So on ADS, the boundary conditions were imposed in the conformal boundary. And this translates in the Ricci flat site to a choice of a metric at the location of p-brain in the middle of the space, not in the asymptotics. So now if you start from boundary conditions in the middle of the space, you want to translate them to something at infinity, this is clearly a non-local operation. And that would explain what people found in the past, that they needed the dictionary to be non-local. So now let's look at small perturbations. So I discussed this earlier. So we said on the ADS side, if we do take G naught to be the flat metric plus a small perturbation, this was the solution. Now we can apply to this the ADS Ricci flat correspondence. So we take D to minus N, and we get this formula here. So now we see that the perturbation falls off at infinity, so the metric is asymptotically flat, transverse to the brains. And for that, it was crucial that the original solution was regular in the interior. So the regularity in the interior of ADS is now mapped to asymptotic flatness. So results that, in a sense, we already know for, I don't know, 30, 40 years, like this one, definitely have a holographic part in it, because this really encodes the fact that you have this Bessel here is encodes the fact that this guy here is dual to the two-point function of a dimension D operator in ADS.
So,
yes.
Does this mean you cannot have the ADS backhole? It's a regularity in the interior.
So in this case, I'm just looking at small perturbations around Minkowski or ADS. I could do the same exercise around black holes, and I will discuss this in the next few slides.
So that combination is regular for smaller?
This combination here is, so that combination here has a delta function singularity at r equals zero, which correlates to the fact, which correlates to the fact that I need to have boundary conditions on the brain. And I had a few more slides on this, but in view of the fact I want to put this, this is in a sense still the old results. But the singularity structure is exactly what we expect from having a source put on the P brain. It's exactly the time, the right.
So you don't go all the way to R equals zero.
So I'm saying at R equals zero, there is a brain that then this sources this linearized perturbations. These linearized perturbations. But you can also, with the results I'm going to discuss later on, you can also map kind of regular solutions to, you have all possibilities, kind of states in ADS are mapped to regular solutions in Minkowski. Now you have all possible combinations. Okay, so now let's go to black holes. So this was, you know, how it acts on, let's say, simple solutions with don't have much structure, but let's see how it acts on black holes. So if you have a planar ADS black brain, if we compactify a number of directions and we map it across, we just get the Schwarzschild P brain. And then there is a special case. So if we take n equals to minus one, which means no sphere, then this is mapped to Riddle space. So the map does act canonically. So now let's see what we can learn about the dynamics of these guys from what we know from the dynamics of these ones using this map. So of course, when we have ADS black brains, okay, we know this is a thermal system, which is correspond to kind of a conformal matter. So part of the dynamics just dictated by the conformal invariance. In particular, the fact that it's conformal means the equation of state is given by this simple formula. Now, if we do the map, so we need to take d to minus n, then we get that now the energy becomes negative, and then the speed of sound becomes imaginary. So in this case, it looks like we go from something good, perhaps something bad. But that's precisely the Gregory-Laplanian instability. And actually, you can do a lot better than just saying this. You can look, study the frequencies of the Gregory-Laplanian modes, starting from fluctuations in ADS, and you get an exact agreement by following that map. And if you combine this with a large D limit, this is precisely the best known analytic expression. So the Gregory-Laplanian instability, it had to be there because of that map. So this explains why we have Gregory-Laplanian. We have Gregory-Laplanian because ADS fluids have this equation of state and this map exists. Now, when we put n equals minus one, so another special case here was the case n equals minus one, where this became the Riddle fluid. Then we can see from here the energy becomes zero. And that's precisely the case of the so-called Riddle fluid, which is, I will review a little bit more detail later. And we can understand also not just this, but also the transport coefficients of that reader fluid in complete detail using this map. Okay, so here is in a little bit more detail. So if you have, so we have the ADS black brains in the fluid regime. So and then the map takes the boundary of ADS now to the position of the accelerated observer here in the deep interior. And then the Dirichlet boundary conditions here are mapped to Dirichlet boundary conditions there. That's precisely the setup as was originally set up by Strominger et al. And then we analyze the fluid regime using the same framework as the ADS fluid correspondence, and we got all transport coefficients. Now this map allows to understand why that worked so well. Yes. Well, this is just a Riddler, so there's no singularity.
So what does it mean if something follows the singularity on the left-hand side?
I think here, in a sense, our understanding also of the fluid is mostly, let's say, in this region up to the horizon. I don't think we can really follow it all the way to the singularity. So similarly, so this wedge here is explained, is mapped to that wedge over there.
Some
of the correspondent breaks down as you pass the horizon, or what happens if you crack the horizon? I mean, it is the, if you see here, so here this solution had a singularity, that solution also had a singularity. But as you take the limit n goes to one, and then you do this change of coordinates, over here, so this is kind of a singular change of coordinates because f of r, of course, goes to zero, and then the metric becomes regular. Okay. So in a sense, you can remove it by bulk diffeomorphism in this case, in this limit. Okay, so let's summarize what we did so far. So the ADS CFT correspondence maps asymptotically locally ADS solutions to a class of Ricci-flat spacetimes. And this Ricci-flat spacetimes inherit some of the holographic properties of ADS. So is this good enough to set up holography for asymptotically flat spacetimes? So the way that we discussed it so far, the map captures the dynamics along the extended directions along the brains. So this gave us correlation functions, the hydrodynamic behavior, transport coefficients, all of that were mapped exactly as it should and explain many of the results that they were known before this work. But the transverse sphere was frozen, and these modes are critical if you want to understand asymptotically flat holography, for example, if you want to understand Schwarzschild black holes, because all the dynamics, if you say you have perturbations of Schwarzschild which are spherically symmetric, there's nothing left by Birkhoff's theorem, so you really need to unfreeze the transverse sphere. So in order to have the map, I need to have the sphere. And in order to, and also the fact that I have the sphere means I can only impose asymptotically flat boundary conditions transverse to a brain. What about really asymptotically flat conditions in all directions? So in order to be able to cover this more general setup, we need to find a way to remove the original restriction that we had the sphere. So this is the topic of, let's say, the newer work, which is this general ADS Ricci-flat correspondence. So what we will do is try to understand ways so that the torus can fluctuate and also the sphere can fluctuate. So we want to unfreeze the torus and the sphere. So of course, if this works in general, clearly it has to work for small fluctuations. If it doesn't work for small fluctuations, it cannot work in general. So let's first analyze the case where these are for linearized perturbations. So we start with ADS with small fluctuations on the torus, and again, Minkowski with a sphere where we do small fluctuations. And want to understand, is there any relation about the results? So in order to do that, we had to do a long and complicated exercise, which I think is interesting of its own, understand the full Kaluza-Klein reduction of both cases on p plus two dimensions, and then compare the corresponding modes and see is there any relation or not. So this is actually the very, very few such results in the literature. And especially, of course, on a torus is fairly simple because it's just a reduction on S1s. Even that, there are very few explicit computations in the literature. And on that side is virtually nothing. So I think, irrespectively of the rest, I think this paper does give kind of a new interesting computation on how to do such computations, which might be useful in different contexts. Okay, so what did we do? So I'm only gonna sketch it in a couple of slides. So if we start on the Minkowski side, so we have this p plus two dimensions, we have this sphere, and we add a general perturbation. And we want to understand, we want to reduce it in terms of the extended p plus two directions. So what we do is we expand the perturbations on spherical harmonics. So we have the S is a scalar spherical harmonics, the V's are vectors, and the T are tensors. And then from a perspective of the p plus two dimensional theory, we have an infinite collection of fields organized in towers. So we have a tower over the tensor tower. We have two vector towers and a number of scalar towers. So this is one set of field equations one needs to derive. And in ADS, there is a similar type of computation. So now, oops. Now we want to reduce over the torus and again put a general perturbation. And then you can do a similar type decomposition. So we expand in harmonics on the torus. And then again, you have a tower, you have a different, an infinite hours of fields from the p plus two dimensional perspective. And so you want to do this exercise and ask yourself, is there any relation between the modes? So a priori, this looks like a long shot. Why would fields expanded on spherical harmonic, on a sphere should have anything to do with something expanded on a torus? And for a long time, it looked like the results are not gonna, one would not make, be able to make sense of them. But nevertheless, we push this through. So again, here in this slide, I summarize a lot of technical computations. So first of all, one needs to combine the perturbations in gauge-invariant combinations because as I wrote them, there are diffeomorphisms that map this linearized fluctuations to the background or map different linear fluctuations among themselves. Now, after you do this, then you get equations which are gauge invariant, and then you have to manage to decouple the equations and finally solve them. And we managed to do all of these steps. Really, we really have the very final solution, explicit solutions for all these infinite hours. And here is the sketch of the results. So for all the modes, the solution take the form I give over here. So they're given again in terms of Bessel functions with different indices, some power multiplying them. And in few cases, on the Minkowski side, there are some modes which are cubic in Bessel functions, which are complicated expressions. Actually, to solve those, this is to some extent state of the art on special functions. We even had to do some things which are not in books. So. But this is now the structure of the modes. So here I put the indices for the overall power and the index of the tensor in all cases. So now if you look at these formulas, if you look at the limit where on this side n is the largest integer, so we take n to be much larger than, so L here is the eigenvalue of the spherical harmonic, the overall angular momentum. And so we take n to be much larger than this, and on this side we take d to be much larger than the other one. then you see that all of these indices match exactly to each other using the ADS Ricci flat map, namely taking D to minus N. And secondly, this very complicated cubic terms actually vanish in this limit. So in this limit, where you take large N or large D, which is a kind of an analog of a limit of large dimensions, then there is an one-to-one correspondence between the different modes. Okay. So this is the first main result. So here we manage to have a very explicit map from one side to the other in this specific limit. Okay, so what about finite N or D? Can we actually do something in that case as well? Okay, so let's see how we proceeded in this. And to be concrete, let me focus on a specific pair, an ADS on a torus, Minkowski on a sphere. So this is the original map. So now we want to turn a perturbation on the Minkowski side that depends on that sphere, because that's in a sense unfreezes that sphere. And we're going to do this in steps. So instead of looking at the more general perturbation first, we're going to consider a case where we still preserve some SO n plus 2, which is smaller than the original group. So we turn in a perturbation that depends on some parts of the sphere, but it still has a smaller invariance. So now if you do that, then these specific perturbations can be mapped to ADS using the ADS Ricci flat correspondence now applied to Minkowski on a smaller sphere. So let's try to visualize this. So Sn plus 1 sphere, you can think of it as a vibration of Sn plus 1 sphere over Sn minus capital N minus 1. Now we can use, now we have again one parameter family of solutions that depend on this capital N. And then we can do ADS Ricci flat map using on that to map them this back to ADS. So now when you do this, then you find that the resulting ADS perturbation now depends on coordinates of the torus. So here, I mean this torus here. And as a result, the map maps a single Minkowski mode to an infinite superposition of ADS modes. Now, if you want to consider the general case, we need to take the limit n minus goes to minus 1 at the end. And now let me give you the same with formulas. So here again, I start with ADS. And now I consider the general perturbation that now depends on some of the coordinates of that sphere. Now here on the second line, I made explicit the picture with the vibration. So here we have the Sn plus 1 sphere is a vibration of S capital N plus 1 over a Q sphere. And now we're going to take these perturbations here to depend on all coordinates except the ones on the right. So now when I do now the ADS Ricci flat map, I place this part here with the torus, and then the rest after the change of coordinates recombines into a Cartesian form of the remaining of the torus coordinates. Then I can convert back to Cartesian coordinates. So now these two parts here become the original torus. And now the perturbation that originally dependent on R, this sigma here, and all the coordinates of that sphere now depend on the coordinates, the Cartesian coordinates of the torus. And then I can Fourier expand now in this angles. And then this way, I started with single modes on ADS, and I end up with the infinite superposition of modes on the ADS side. So then once you have that, then the last step is to take the limit n goes to minus 1 to get the more general case. So in this case, in a sense, you want to remove that sphere. And when you do this, so naively, you get half of this sphere. So 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 when you take the limit n goes to minus 1, you have the zero sphere. The zero sphere is a collection of two points. So you can think of a sphere. So the, let's say n-dimensional sphere is the set of points in n plus 1 dimensions, which are of equal distance from the center. So if you want a zero sphere, this is a set of points on R1, which is the unit distance from the origin. So that's two points. So then when we take this limit, so we have one point give us a half a sphere and maps this half of the Minkowski spacetime. And the other point gives us the other half of the space. So then we can obtain the general general perturbations in this fashion. So again, to summarize, if we take the limit where n or d go to infinity, then there is a map, one-to-one map between the modes. If you are in a case where n or d are finite, then the map involves infinite superposition. So one mode is mapped to infinite superposition of the other. Okay. And the same procedure, so here I analyze this for linear perturbations, but the same procedure also works for a class of nonlinear solutions, kind of plane waves. And you can do it the other way around as well. You can start from ADS and go to Minkowski with the same results. So now this leads, in a sense, to the final kind of the bigger picture, this generalized, what we call generalized ADS Ricci flat correspondence, which is beyond this linearized analysis. One can ask, if I start with some Ricci flat spacetime in some dimensions, so that can be specific, like 3 or 4, is this physics of that spacetime related in any way to ADS physics? And similarly, if I start from ADS in some specific dimension, is the physics of this spacetime related in some way to some Ricci flat spacetime in different dimensions? And for this to happen, this would always be the case if you're able to uplift the solution to n plus p plus 3 on a sphere, such that when you take the limit n goes to minus 1, you go down here. Because if you do this uplift, then you can use the standard ADS Ricci flat correspondence to map it here, and then take that limit to have a direct link between the two. And same thing over there. So these diagrams we have expressed in terms of actual equations. I think it's an interesting mathematical problem to see whether these equations have solutions and whether they're unique or what are the properties and so on. We can definitely analyze these equations perturbatively, and we have done it in some cases, but the general bigger problem is still an open issue. But I'd like to finish with one example where actually this can be done completely nonlinearly. And this is the case of the Riddler spacetime we discussed earlier. So if we start with Riddler p plus 2 over here, there is a lift to Ricci flat spacetime in higher dimensions on a sphere, namely just the Planck p-brain. So if I take the limit n goes to minus 1, and then I go back to Riddler, and now once we have these solutions that contain a sphere, then we can map them across to ADS and understand the properties using properties of ADS. And then in the limit, this explains properties of Riddler. This is precisely how kind of the Riddler fluid metric to second order in a derivative expansion and all the corresponding transport coefficients can be obtained from those of ADS in that fashion. So that explains not just the fact that we're able to do the computation explains all specific coefficients. So there were 6 transport coefficients, which at the time it looked like an observation that are the same as for ADS. But if you look at the values, we're exactly the same values as in ADS. And this map explains this picture. So here, in the bigger picture, we like to have an analog of this, but for more general spacetime. If you start, let's say, for Schwarzschild, and we uplift this to the family of solutions, we can then use the map across and so on. Okay, so let me now conclude. Okay, so what I told you today is that perturbations of Minkowski spacetime can be mapped to perturbation of ABS. And we discuss how to unfreeze the sphere and the torus. So we saw that in the large D and large N limit, individual modes are mapped to each other. But if we look at finite N or D, then single modes are mapped to infinite superpositions. And we also saw that asymptotically flat spacetimes inherit some of the holographic properties of ABS. In particular, we saw that holographic data are encoded in unexpected ways. So for example, the source for the dual operators are now located to a position of a p-brain. That I didn't discuss in this talk, but it is contained in the papers. So the stress energy tensor due to this p-brain is exactly the same as a holographic energy momentum tensor. So the stress energy tensor is holographic. And asymptotic flatness is the analog of regularity in the interior. And now using these properties, one can now push the ABS dictionary to asymptotically flat spacetimes. I think there are a lot of things to be done. In a sense, we just managed to kind of crack them up, which was a fairly complicated exercise. But we now at least understand it in the perturbative level. For example, Ricci flat spacetimes inherit a generalized conformal structure of ABS. And it would be interesting to extract the implications of this hidden conformal invariance. We've seen over the years many hints for hidden conformal invariance in computations done in asymptotically flat spacetimes around black holes. So perhaps the origin of those is through these maps. So clearly, it would be interesting to apply these methods to Schwarzschild. What can we learn about Schwarzschild by mapping it to ABS? And okay, bigger picture is that we want to use these techniques to develop holography for general Ricci flat spacetimes. So, thank you.
So this thing that you said, asymptotic flatness is the analog of regularity in the interior. So, does this really mean that you're turning things inside out? When you go
it looks like, yes, I reverse things because the boundary goes into the interior.
Yeah.
And the regularity in the interior in the other case becomes the behavior of the fields at infinity.
So, but in that case, then, I mean, if I now start with some small perturbations in the interior of ABS and make them bigger and bigger to make a black hole, shouldn't that mean that then my Minkowski shouldn't be asymptotically flat?
Well, you want to start with perturbations. If you want to start with something that has, let's say, a conventional description on ABS in terms of CFT data, okay, these perturbations have to be regular in the interior and have prescribed boundary conditions in infinity.
When you say regular in the interior, you mean the origin of ABS? Or?
At the origin, well, everywhere in ABS.
Everywhere in ABS.
Yes.
But then, so if I want to make them, I just parametrically make them bigger and bigger until I make a black hole, or I guess maybe dynamically have a startup collapse and makes a black hole.
Well, it would be nice to extend this to kind of a more dynamical setup, or you can use maybe numerics to track it.
Yeah. So I guess that's what I'm wondering, that does it mean that I start with something asymptotically flat and end up not being asymptotically flat?
No, I don't think so. I think it's, in a sense, that you need both kind of boundary conditions and let's say if you want to do this for black holes, you should start from the correspondence I had with black holes, kind of black p-brain maps to a Schwarzschild black hole, and then look for kind of perturbations around it or look for solutions that are similar to
understand.
Those.
Well, this is a transition from one to the other. Start from something as regular and then make a black hole.
Well, I mean, if you follow, let's say, do you want to follow the kind of thermalization process? Okay, that is, in some cases, you know how to do it numerically. one should, of course, you have to do it to really use the map. You have to be able to do it for family of solutions, not just in general dimension, unless one understands this more generalized picture and then follow those.
Going from ADS to Ritchie flat, you had, for instance, just pure ADS. That was convenient because you got the R to the D, went to the R,
yes,
to the end, okay, that would be a black hole.
Yes.
What if you start with a black hole? And large dimensions. So then on the Ritchie flat side, you're going to have something that goes from the R to the higher power. What is that?
I think that the map goes, let's go back to. This is the case, right? I start for.
Right, I don't want to start with a planar ADS. No, that's a black. Right. So I want an F that has both in the ADS side, that has R to the D, and has also one over R to some power.
I mean, as long as, let's say, you're able to put some some toroidal direction. Then you can carry the map. We actually did it with more for almost all known cases. It always kind of it is more canonical than one would think, given how I got the correspondence. Kind of maps known standard solutions to known standard solutions.
Right. So I'm thinking of what happens with the analog of the global Schwarzschild global ADS Schwarzschild black hole.
Yeah, so for that, of course, I cannot do the map using this formulation. So I will have to kind of use the extension that I had in the later part of the talk. That would be a more complicated case if I now have automatically some torus to do the correspondence. Then we have to involve this infinite superpositions and so on. But it's certainly a test case if one has this more general correspondence. So if you want to do it, in a sense, you have to start from this ADS with global coordinates, ADS black holes in global coordinates, and then if you can map this in some higher dimensions on some torus, then you can map it across. Actually, the equations are quite interesting. So if you want to write this, where was it? So here, if you want to start either from here and go up or from there, so you need to start from, suppose you're given a Ritchie flat metric, then you need to solve some sort of Liouville equation, and then there are some field equations which you can use n now as an additional coordinate where you put initial conditions, and then you want to integrate up. It's an interesting mathematical problem. I don't think it has been considered previously. Yes?
When we were doing ADS-CFT originally or the non-conformal brains, an important part was the idea of decoupling. I remember that word when
Bob. Yes.
And so when I have excitations, the interior, I don't expect them to leak out. And I'm not sure, is there something that replaces that in the Ritchie flat case?
Well, in the Ritchie flat case, I mean, it's this is, in a sense, this is meant to be after the decoupling, right? So in the case of, let's say, the non-conformal branch ADS, we started from some asymptotically flat configuration that has kind of a throat region. And then we took a decoupling limit that focuses the dynamics on the throat, and then this map to the dynamics on the brain. So in this case, we now have the analog of the configuration before the decoupling limit. We only have the analog of the near horizon.
But a feature that you inherit is, for example, a graviton, I don't expect to go out to the boundary and change the shape of the boundary. And here it seems you've got this thing in the middle of the space, and I don't see why a graviton can't come down and just collide with it and start to move it around.
Yeah, I think that's more a feature. So that this may be related to the non-localities. I think it is. In general, yeah, gravitons from infinity will interact. So it looks more like a dynamical brain in the center of your space-time. Yeah.
But if it's a tiny thing after the graviton movement, I guess I'm not sure if I understand the word correctly.
Well, it's just there was a decoupling. There was an interior theory and there was sort of a boundary theory. Mm-hmm. And like the graviton doesn't change the, or graviton excitations aren't going to change the shape.
Yes.
Right.
No, that's completely in the conformal bound. That's completely right. In the sense, in ADS-CFT, the boundary is rigid because it's infinite distance
right.
apart, doesn't fluctuate. In this case, we have the brain in the middle of the space.
But the idea is the hope is still that there's a brain theory that's going to be holographic
to the yes.
the entire.
Yes. I mean, to say the least, at least one would like to see, once you transport the dictionary from one side to the next, how far you can understand about the dynamics of the bulk. I mean, I think it bounds to be more complicated, the asymptotically flat case. Like for finite n, it involves infinite superposition of modes. And then if you, write down the fluctuation would be written in terms of superposition of correlators, infinite superposition of correlators of the CFT.